From the KBAA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Ryan Levy. Later this week, Columbia will be treated to dozens of documentary films that explore the many twists and turns of the human experience. But documentaries don't only happen on screen. This past fall, students in their first semester at Mizzou's Jonathan B. Murray Center for Documentary Journalism put together audio documentaries which explore the lives of some of Columbia's residents. Over the next half hour, we'll share some of these audio documentaries with you. First up, Mark Nemchek talks with MU student Brian Cooper, who has blended his passions for hip-hop and classical music.
What was that?
Hotline Bling, mixed in with my own twist.
My name is Brian Cooper. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I am at my fourth year at Mizzou. I started playing when I was about 5 years old at my church in Chicago. I started playing hip hop on the violin probably, I want to say maybe my junior year of high school. The reason why I did it was because, I just wanted to play something that would relate to my peers. You know, a lot of my peers, they don't know, you know, some Mozart songs. They don't know Beethoven or Haydn or stuff like that. So when I play that, it's not going to be recognizable to the ear, and majority of them may not appreciate the music, you know, that is involved. Hip hop is music. Hip hop is captivating. By using the violin and to play hip hop songs, I think that will trigger some people's mindsets of like, hey, you know, this instrument is dope. Look, he's playing some music that we can relate to. I had some roller coasters and things like coming up with the violin. So I used to be like, nah, man, I'm not good. But I saw myself evolve and get better and get more opportunities with the instrument. So I gave it a shot one day. I think the first hip hop song that I played, I was just practicing in my room. It was Tupac Changes. If I can hear a song, I kind of know where the notes are on the violin. So I'll just go back and play it. And if I mess up, just hear, run it back, play it again till I get the pattern. And once I get the pattern, it kind of everything flows from there. It's similar to classical music. So I think it's more similarities that we see between the two than differences. And if you really look, the differences is probably just us, you know, just being so immune to, hey, okay, this is hip hop, hey, this is classical. And really, like, you know, the similarities outweigh the differences.
A ukulele fight club? Morgan Lieberman spent some time with this diverse group of Columbia residents.
Ashley Ernst. Do you need me to spell that for you? Okay. I'm from Harrisburg, Missouri, which is just a few miles north of here. And I started this group, I guess, a couple of years ago because I just wanted other people to play with. I was tired of sitting in my living room and making music by myself.
I
as I was doing this, people asked me, well, do you know what Fight Club is? And have you seen the movie? And I was like, no, I haven't. And so they were like, I don't think you should call it that. And I went and watched the movie. I loved the movie. And I was like, I think it totally should be called the Fight Club. The point being, you come to play.
This town, rock it inside out. We're gonna rock this town, make them.
Can't just sit back and watch. And maybe the point being we're all a little crazy. I don't know. It could go either way. We started out with just maybe five people. We had some groups that got really, really big. I think some people got maybe a little scared off by that or felt it was too big. I don't know. But we've got this core group of about 10 to 15 people who come twice a month to Lucky's Cafe to just sit and jam and play. And it's very informal. And I hope that people who are beginners would feel comfortable hanging out with us, even if they can't keep up with all of the songs, to at least try. Because you find yourself improving when you play with other people in a way that you don't when you're on your own. Play the ukulele are very different, I think, from other types of musicians who maybe assume you know what you're doing and have some skills. And the ukulele players are like, we don't care if you've never seen the instrument before, we'll show you how to play. And so it's very informal, and I hope a place that people who are just getting started playing music would feel comfortable joining.
I'm Debbie Karwoski. I've lived in Columbia since 1972 when I came as a college freshman. I'm still in town. And I'm a member of the Ukulele Fight Club of Columbia, one of the original members. The ukulele is such a great little instrument that the average person can pick it up and learn three or four chords really quickly and start playing songs. And we all started at that level, and we're just excited to have other people come and join us. And we get together twice a month to jam, and we have the occasion occasionally to play at other events in town, and it's just fun. Just have a good time getting out and being in the community, hoping to introduce this fun little instrument to other people. Performing at Artrageous or First Fridays in the North Village Art Districts, we're just excited when we have those opportunities. It's really just fun being together with the other players and sharing our music. It's an eclectic group of people. We have different professional and hobby interests, and the age group spans from probably middle schoolers, the occasional high schooler, to retired people and people all ages in between. We're very inclusive. Jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We ain't caught up in your love affair. It just encompasses such a wide variety, and we're not stuck playing in any one genre. So that's a great fun as well, to span the genres. Let me be your ruler. Another downtown event that we did a while ago, we encountered a college student who was so excited to see a ukulele group. She has a ukulele. She joined the Facebook group so she could keep up on things.
I I was walking at downtown Columbia with my friend, and all of a sudden I heard the sound of ukuleles. And when you hear the sound of ukuleles, you just can't help but follow it. And we see this group of ukuleleists, is that what they're called, ukuleleists, playing. And we watched the rest of the song and clapped, and I saw that they had a songbook. And so I asked if I could play, or if they would play one of the songs in the book, and they said, yeah, do you play? And I said, yeah, I do. So they called me up and we played Jolene, and it was so wonderful, and it was honestly one of the best experiences that I've had in college so far.
I like the moment when we're playing together down at Lucky's and we just start to sound really good. And it's kind of unexpected because, you know, we don't get together and practice or anything like that, but all of a sudden everybody's singing out, everybody's playing, and I think it's very, I don't want to sound too new agey, but I think it is very healing to make your own music and to be singing with other people. We don't get that opportunity unless you're in a choir. You don't have that chance very often.
Lindsay Miller explores the Missouri String Project, which gives young kids the chance to play instruments by offering viola, violin, and cello lessons to grade schoolers.
Good. All right. Good work. Let's look at number...
Go rest.
Yeah, go ahead and rest.
My name is Andrew Monson. I'm a sophomore music education major. My primary instrument is the viola. The Missouri String Project is a program that is run through the university. It's all university students, string players, some education majors, some not. And we teach, starting at the third grade level, just people who are interested, kids who don't get that kind of opportunity to do it in school. We give them an opportunity just to start learning the instrument from scratch. They have an opportunity to go on to a second year, and then there's kind of a continuation of the program.
My name is Joan, and I'm in third grade. I like playing instruments and going to the zoo.
Oh, one, two, three, and shh, G. You can do that?
Nope.
Try it out. Practice it a little bit.
I was again.
D, E, F, R, G, H, D.
I know the first part though. And then got another rest.
A, sh, D, sh.
Okay.
There you go. Now you just got taught a lesson. Don't mess with your tape.
Very good.
What made me want to start playing the viola is I just wanted to start, I don't know, I just wanted to play an instrument. It was just the right size and right noises and stuff. It just felt comfortable.
Patience is definitely the most important characteristic to have. Generally, these kids are really good kids, and we don't see too many with big behavioral problems, but even then, they like to talk, they like to misbehave, they get lazy a lot of times, and a lot of times they're just not getting these things that we've all had drilled into our heads for years now. And so just having the patience to kind of work with them and understand from their perspective what it's like learning these instruments again. It's really important to understand that process.
Does someone, a volunteer, want to lead us through the parts game today?
What the heck is a parts game?
You know the parts game.
What part is this?
Yeah.
You're going to say, what part is this? And you're going to point to it.
Okay.
Got it? And you're going to get higher and higher and higher with your voice. Cool? Okay, you got it? My experience on my second year of teaching has been really rewarding, especially now that I get to see our students last year come back into the program. It's been really rewarding for me just to see them kind of start this thing that I love to do. My turn. Ready? Go. Your turn. Ready? Go.
Who is that? I'm doing this next year too. And then you're gonna do that, and then you're gonna do that, and then you're gonna do that.
You're listening to audio documentaries produced by first semester students at Mizzou's Murray Center for Documentary Journalism. Next up, Kyle Pyatt takes us inside one performer's experience defying social norms.
the crowd's like looking at you, and it's just like you're trying to kind of like ham it up and just be yourself and like but this alter ego of yourself.
Thank you all for coming out to support our wonderful and talented performers.
Yeah, I see the crowd's looking pretty full. I wonder if we broke the fire code again, because we have a tendency to do that each year.
What led me to being a performer is because I'm a total like cheesehead. Like, I love to perform, I love to ham it up, and I love to make people laugh. But the whole drag king performing is because it's a chance to kind of like screw the gender like binary and kind of like screw the patriarchy and like, you know, all those fun things that social justice people like to do. So I had 2 days to pick out songs. So I literally just went in like the most listened to songs on my iTunes playlists and went from there.
Performers work very hard to get ready for tonight, so feel free to throw a dollar or two their way.
Yeah, I didn't look this pretty not to get paid.
It kind of adds that extra ego boost, you know, like people are giving me money when they don't have to shake my butt on stage, and it's just kind of a good feeling. Expect to be kind of amazed because this is, you know, people playing with the societal like idea that, you know, women have to be feminine and men have to be masculine, and to cross those gender lines is like kind of unexpected and it makes people uncomfortable. So go in with an open mind, and you might be uncomfortable for a few seconds, but just like let yourself enjoy what's going on around you, because the people on stage are having the time of their lives and they want the audience to also have the time of their lives. So do that and tip the performers.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.
They provide the soundtrack to Falls at Mizzou, and now Zach Rieger gives us a peek inside the world of Marching Mizzou.
Marching Mizzou is the marching band that represents the University of Missouri most prominently at football games. They really support the team, and they are an essential part of the game day experience.
Marching Mizzou is a collection of musicians from different various backgrounds and walks of life that get together and do what they love, which is play on a marching band field.
Tuesday through Friday, 4 to 6, we're out here on the practice field, you know, putting in work. We run through all of the songs that we play, and we march it as well. So when it comes to game day, it's not really a surprise what we're doing.
I would say my favorite part of being in Marching Mizzou is just doing all the traveling, because I've gotten to see a lot more schools and places that I wouldn't have been able to do if I was just a regular student. We've been to Texas A&M, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia.
My freshman year, 2012, I went to the Tennessee trip, and that was a lot of fun. My sophomore year, I went to Kentucky and Vanderbilt, and then my junior year, I went to Texas A&M, and that was a really unique experience.
My favorite trips that I've been on have been the Florida trip that we took last season and the Georgia trip that we just took this past weekend.
My favorite trip might be the 2013 SEC Championship trip, just because I wasn't really expecting us to get there. My freshman year, I never knew anything about Mizzou football, and we played really badly that first year, but because we had a lot of injuries. So the next year, I wasn't really expecting much, and then we played really well.
Marching Mizzou, it seems to me like a bunch of kids who just get together and, you know, make the stadium like pumped during football games and halftime. We are the best because we are. I've done marching band in previous years of my high school career, and it's really the one thing that kept me interested in school to begin with. And so doing it at a collegiate level was probably the most natural thing.
I had never marched in high school, and I thought it would be a great experience for me, and I wasn't wrong.
I can honestly say if I didn't join Marching Mizzou, I probably wouldn't have stayed here at the university. I had a really rough transition period moving here because I didn't know anybody. I got like a friendly push from people in my section and in the band just to come out and start meeting new people, making new friends, and I still call a lot of these people my best friends today.
Josh is the single dad of 3-year-old Peyton. He tells Steve Gasecki about the struggles and joys of raising his son on his own.
When was he born? What was his birthday?
July 21st, 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he'll be 3 coming up
here. Yeah, next month. Yeah. Yeah.
How are the twos doing? How's the terrible twos?
Terrible twos, yeah. Yeah, he was a big biter there, man, for a little bit. Yeah, I kept having to go back and pick him up from daycare because I'd get calls. I guess it's a state law, you know, if they bite two times, it's all right. But if they bite 3 times, they got to go. And we had a lot of issues with that. Uh-huh. So, but it's all right, man. You know, it's finally when they get a personality. So it's fun, you know, 1 and under is kind of, you know, they just eat and sleep, and, you know, so it's good. Finally talk and walk. So it's cool. He's funny, man. He likes to mimic people a lot, and he likes to think he's a monster, which is, you know, have you seen Monster University?
Yeah,
the new one, yeah. It's pretty funny, because, you know, that the original when we were growing up, and he loves this one,
That's
so.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Were you there when he was born?
Yeah. Him, his mom and I were still together at that point, so.
What was that whole experience like?
It was weird, man, because, you know, you've seen that video. It's very...
From health class.
Yeah, it's very gross, but when it's your own kid, it's beautiful, you know, at the same time. I cut the umbilical cord, and that was cool. I mean, I'm willing to date somebody, but I mean, I'm not like necessarily looking to settle down anytime at this point. You know, I kind of want to get financially better, you know, in a better place for me and my son before, you know, I kind of focus on that. So. I feel like it's a lot of times the mother's looked highly upon, and you know the father is seen as the dropout, you know, the one who leaves, you know. But you know, I personally feel, you know, the place I was at in my life, you know, my son made me a better person, you know, kind of helped me find where I was going, you know. You knew me, I was kind of, you know, doing wrong things, and you know, I went to school and, you know, got that, you know, settled, and I got a job, and you know, I'm just trying to do the best I can by him. And so I think that if anybody's willing to put in the work, you know, they can accomplish it. You know, Daniel, I think he was like five months, and we separated. And then she didn't see him for like 2-3 months, and then we're supposed to have like a 50-50 agreement, like she sees him Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we alternate weekends, but it just kind of goes on when she wants to see him, so. Mm-hmm. know, they always seem happy, or, you know, I don't get a lot of judgment as far as I can tell, you know, yeah. So, at least I hope not, you know, if it is, it's behind my back, you know, so I'm sure there are people that judge, you know, me, and because I'm being a young parent, or Daniel, you know, but, you know, like I said, I wouldn't know, so.
You'll never see us again. I mean, have you seen that Peyton is kind of like aware of that, that she's not really around anymore?
Yeah, well, it's when she picks him up, she doesn't, he never really wants to go with her. Like, she usually has to bribe him with something. Like, when he picked him up the other day, like, he didn't want to go. And she was like, oh, but we can go get a new pool. And he was like, oh, okay, you know, then we can go. It's kind of like that every time, which is really bad to say, but it is kind of like that. He doesn't like, and I don't know if it's that he doesn't necessarily have fun with her, but just he you know, this is his home. He feels more comfortable here with me and my family. So, you know, I don't know if that's what it is. You know, I don't think she mistreats him or anything like that, but, you know, I think it's a home thing.
Yeah.
So...
You just heard audio documentaries from first semester students at Mizzou's Murray Center for Documentary Journalism. If you missed any of the documentaries or want to listen again, you can find them all online at kbia.org. Also on kbia.org, you can find our complete coverage of this year's True False Film Fest. In addition to our True False conversations with filmmakers, we have teamed up with Vox Magazine to create audio reviews of some of the films at this year's festival. You can hear all of the reviews tomorrow night here on KBIA at 6 p.m., but for a sneak peek, let's listen to Vox's Madison Fellers' review of The Bad Kids.
Midway through The Bad Kids, there's a single shot of Lee and Layla walking uphill through the desert. There's no dialogue, no emotion, just teens carrying a baby and pushing a stroller up a steep roadway. For the entirety of the documentary, that is what you see. 11th and 12th graders trying to push, against all barriers, to make something of their lives. Set in California's Mojave Desert, The Bad Kids focuses on Black Rock High School, an alternative public school for students who are at risk of dropping out. Some of them don't have a stable place to stay, food to eat, clean clothes to wear, or people around to support them. Directors Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe zoom in on the stories of three teens trying to succeed at Black Rock. Black Rock's principal, Vonda Veland, and the other teachers and staff are the obvious heroes of the film. Veland calls students to wake them up in the morning, passes out milk, and greets everyone on their way into school. She counsels students day in and day out, with many of them breaking down in her office. She is the guidepost of the film, showing the importance and necessity of having competent and caring school staff. And yet we never directly hear from her. The film is shot as an observational documentary, and not once do we see Veland speak to the camera. She never tells us why she does what she does for these students. She never tells us how she manages the emotional roller coaster. But if you look hard enough, the answers can be found sprinkled throughout the film. In the end, The Bad Kids delivers an equally heartwarming and heartbreaking look at the lives of at-risk teens and the adults who fight for them. Even though the focus is on three specific students, you leave feeling like you understand the struggles of each and every Black Rock student, and you hope they don't continue walking uphill alone.
That was Vox Magazine's Madison Feller reviewing The Bad Kids, which will be screening at True Falls this weekend. To hear all of our reviews, plus an extended interview with Murray Center director Stacey Wolfel, tune in to our True Falls preview special tomorrow night at 6 p.m. here on KBIA. For KBIA News, I'm Ryan Levy.